Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record Program number 715, Interview with Russ Baker. This is being recorded on June 6th of the year 2010. Once again, it's my pleasure and privilege to bring back to our airwaves Russ Baker, the author of the formidable and vitally important Family of Secrets, subtitled The Bush Dynasty, America's Invisible Government, and the Hidden History of the Last 50 Years. Russ, welcome back once again to our airwaves.
Thank you very much. Good to be here again.
In this remarkable book, you have documented networking, as I've said so many times in our past interviews. And everywhere one looks with the Bush family, we've looked primarily at Poppy Bush in our first interviews. Everywhere one looks with him, one finds intelligence connections overlapping and inextricably linked with his business connections. And a point I'd like to stress and highlight as we get into the two interviews we're going to record today. In turn, when one sees Bush electoral politics, one sees, once again, inextricable links with the intelligence community. We have not spoken much about George W. Bush, W. or George II, as he's often called. And in these last two interviews, of course, that is going to be the primary focal point. But in discussing the political genesis of George W. Bush, I'd like to reference that to Emilio, which you actually formally conceptualized in one section of your book, where you talked about Poppy's web, because indeed it was within Poppy's web that not only the young spider George W. Bush was nurtured, but also another name that is familiar to younger members of the audience, and that is Karl Rove. Tell us about Poppy's web, so to speak, and the raising of the young spider Karl Rove.
Well, sure. And now I have to refresh myself a little bit on the context for this. Okay, so this is when he left the CIA in the...
Actually, just ever so slightly, I think this is actually before he was formally named CIA. But of course, in our past interviews, we've looked at abundant evidence that he was agency from the get-go professionally, dating back to the immediate post-war period.
The chapter in Family of Secrets called Poppy's Web actually begins as he has left the CIA.
Yep.
And George H.W. Bush or Poppy Bush, what he does is he tries to convince Jimmy Carter almost desperately to keep him on as director of the agency, and Carter won't do it. So he returns to Texas, and he begins working with a company called First International Bank Shares. And this is one of many interesting banks, of which you would have to include BCCI and a number of others, that seem to do sort of interesting international business, shall we say. And another one was called Republic National Bank. And I look at that earlier in Family of Secrets. That's an outfit also in Dallas that had an office tower in which we saw people like George de Morenschild having offices, law firms that did work for the intelligence community and what have you. And so we see these multiple financial entities that all of which are connected to Bush in some ways. But in this case, First International takes him in. And as you pointed out in an earlier program, there's also this Dallas Council on World Affairs, an entity that all these people would sit on it. So you'd see people from Republic and from First International all sitting on these anti-communist groupings along with people from Dresser Industries, oil companies, and what have you. So it was a very, very tight-knit group. Another one would be Riggs Bank out of Washington, D.C., which has shown up in all kinds of scandals, also involving intelligence. So anyway, Poppy goes to work for this outfit. He, like almost everything else in his life, when asked, could not remember what he did for the bank.
Just like he couldn't remember where he was and what he was doing on November 22nd, 1963, despite the fact that he was certainly in Dallas the night before and very probably that very day.
That's right. And as far as this particular bank goes, we see young George W., works as a clerk bookkeeper at the Houston affiliate. And again, this is training in the family business. And in Family of Secrets, I stress the point that the family business is basically the business of managing the world on behalf of these financial and resource extraction elites. So anyway, First International, closely associated with the Bass, Hunt, and Murchison families. Its largest shareholder, Joe Allbritton, ran D.C.'s Riggs Bank, which held the accounts for several embassies, including Saudi Arabia. By the way, Joe Albritton's son now runs the website Politico.
Really?
Yes.
I knew it had a Republican genesis, but I didn't place the name. Go ahead,
yeah,
Russ.
Which is another, you know, interesting thing, as we've talked about on earlier programs, and as I get into in Family of Secrets, of course, Time Magazine and Henry Luce, who was in Skull and Bones with Prescott Bush, and were very, very helpful to the Bushes and to the intelligence establishment. Newsweek, I get into a little bit in the book, also connected with the intelligence apparatus. And so this is very, very common because, of course, media is extremely important. And so you find media, banking, intelligence, oil, often all connected. In any case, the people on the board of this bank that Poppy Bush joins, he, by the way, gets involved with their London branch, and that's very interesting. What was the London branch? There was a sense, I should say, of some of the people I interviewed, that the London branch was involved with international cover for the movement of monies that were not to be traced. But the president and the CEO of the London branch, on whose board Poppy sat, was a former FBI agent and an employee of Magnolia Oil, which your listeners may know is a company that offered provided employment to several figures associated with Lee Harvey Oswald. So anyway, this bank grows during this period that Bush comes on board, and then it ends up merging with this other bank I mentioned, Republic, to become the biggest commercial bank in Texas. What's interesting about it is that 14 months later, the parent holding company fails, resulting in a $3.5 billion federal bailout. Now, the reason I mention that is there's George H.W. Bush deep into this thing. It gets this giant bailout, of course. By the time it gets a bailout, he has moved on to be in the White House.
And, of course, that perfectly qualified George H.W. Bush to become his work for FIB, as you call it, First International Bank Shares, to become head of the Vice President's Task Force on Financial Deregulation under Reagan, which led to the SNL debacle. But again, Karl Rove is a name that became very well known as, quote, Bush's brain, unquote. But actually, it was the Poppy Bush who nurtured the young Rove.
Well, that's right. Karl Rove, back in the early 70s, was involved with the College Republicans, and there was a scandal. There was a battle for the leadership of it. I go into this in a little bit of detail in Family of Secrets, and he is basically accused by one of the other factions of the College Republicans of encouraging dirty tricks. Very interesting early in his career. And so George H.W. Bush in 1973, now chairman of the RNC, Republican National Committee, he is asked to investigate and decide who's telling the truth. And he basically clears Rove of the charges and then promptly hires him as his assistant. And this is very interesting to me. What was it about Karl Rove that, out of all the bright and ambitious young Republicans, that endeared him to Poppy Bush? We don't know. We can only speculate. But, of course, that puts him into the Bush family apparatus. There is a story they like to put out about how he first met W. right around that period. W. came back from Harvard Business School, and Rove described how it was his job to meet him at the airport and give him the car keys. I imagine it wasn't so limited an encounter, because obviously they made an impression on each other. And from then on out, he was keeping an eye on and looking at the younger Bush as he put it, as a horse he could ride, as an opportunity to get all the way to the top.
One of the things that I'd like to touch on, too, switching now to the subject of W. Bush, once again, and listeners to this program are familiar up to a point with Arbusto and Harkin, both of which I want to get into in a couple of minutes, but there are a number of early business ventures, and we'll touch on Harvard Business School in a minute, but W., of course, was a Texas Air National Guardsman and ostensible fighter pilot. We talked about that in an earlier interview. But in summer jobs and in some early employment stints, once again, we see not only some of the transgenerational networking, you know, from grandfather to son to grandson, but also, once again, some of the inextricable links with intelligence. You mentioned briefly a job George had with a company called Stratford and with a fellow named Bob Gow. I wonder if you'd touch on that for us.
Sure. Well, Bob is an interesting figure. He had worked first. He was out of that same network of the prep schools and elite Eastern universities, and knew the Bush family. And was offered a job to come work for, I believe, I have to go back and refresh my memory again, and this is all in Family Secrets, but Bob had worked, somehow was connected with the favorite uncle of Poppy Bush, and then he was brought in to work with Poppy at Zapata, and he said some things that were quite interesting. If you study these people carefully enough, they even though they're very circumspect and cautious, they always reveal some things. And so he revealed how Zapata had all of these foreign subsidiaries in Liechtenstein and all these places, which were ideal for moving money. And he described it as just a thing for a corporation to minimize its taxes. But of course, a company that had no profits had no reason to minimize taxes. And so there are literally dozens of offshore entities sound like something else. Whether Bob knew they were something else or not, I don't know. But as they say, he did work for Bush, and he described how much of what the company did was networking with powerful people, which, again, didn't make a lot of sense for a tiny little offshore drilling company. But Bob worked first for Poppy Bush in this peculiar Zapata offshore, and then started his own company, Stratford, where he then employed the son, George W. And Stratford is another one of these curious things. It had it was buying up companies right and left all over the world. Didn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. He talks about how they tried all these different schemes that they could never really make any money. But the company itself just doesn't make any sense to me. And I have to wonder whether it was not some sort of cover for something else, which may explain why George W. Bush, when he worked there, traveled abroad, yet never put that on his resume. And this is interesting because when he ran for president in 2000, he was criticized and even ridiculed for wanting to be president of the United States, yet seemingly having never left the country. And he didn't even try to dispute that. And yet I find that evidence that he was in Jamaica and a number of other countries on behalf of Stratford, and he doesn't talk about it.
One of the things I found quite amusing, at one point you actually quote Robert Gow as saying that under his employment capacity, I've forgotten offhand whether it was Zapata and or Stratford, that he actually he was explicit about having worked for the CIA in places like Guatemala. And I think it was you, maybe another interviewer that you quoted, but asked him, did he find anything of interest there? And he said, nope. nothing there.
He said there was nothing, but he did admit that the way he described it was that he had a plantation and that they asked him to keep his eyes open, and that the agency did, and he was glad to report back to them periodically about how he had never found anything.
Yeah, one of the things that you point out, and again, it's one of the major features of the book, is that when one studies Bush family enterprises, not only are they networking with very powerful corporate interests, many of them household words, but the ventures themselves, and we're going to see the same thing with W, really don't make a lot of sense as business ventures, but as intelligence and money laundering fronts, they make a lot of sense indeed. Let's go back to another early employer of George W. Bush, and I believe this was actually one of the jobs he worked when he was already at Harvard Business School, and that is Alaska Airlines and Neil Barrett. Tell us about them.
Sure. Formerly Alaska International Industries, they had airline and construction operations at the time of the Alaska pipeline boom, and I managed to interview. I think one of the strengths of Family of Secrets is not just that I tell these stories, but that wherever possible, I quote the sources on the record. And so there are almost no anonymous sources in here. And I actually managed, it took some effort, I must say, but I managed to interview the owner of the company. And he told me point blank, the quote is, he was actually a political hire about W. He says that somebody had called from Houston and asked us if we could put George Bush's kid to work for the summer, give him a summer job. And he says, yeah, we did that. And he actually says W wasn't too bad at his job, put together a business plan, which, of course, he would know how to do from Harvard. But he says he always wondered why he was up there. And he actually says, one of the only thing that ever crossed my mind is that he was up here. He was supposed to be in the National Guard someplace. So here's the head of the company saying that he thinks that the father was maybe squirreling the son away. I think we may have talked on an earlier show about how W was clearly basically AWOL from the military, and his father was sort of hiding him out at first at Harvard, and that you could hide out at Harvard may seem amazing, but keep in mind he was supposed to be in Houston at the time, and then later shipping him off to Alaska. So then I asked Berg about his company, and, you know, the quotes are amazing. We were all over the world, and we did all kinds of weird stuff. We did some spying for the CIA after Jimmy Carter went in, gutted the CIA, and almost ruined them. They came to people like me because they didn't have any money, and by law they couldn't be in some countries. So, and then he says, we did some work for the CIA in Guatemala. I mean, it's just very, very interesting. He mentions Iran-Contra and so on and so forth. And he talks about how they were always brought in by companies that would, you know, that he knew were CIA, but themselves would not quite admit, but it was all one step removed. And it's just very interesting how this works and what an enormous sprawling network we're talking about of, I would have to say, thousands of such entities, big and small, all over the world. And there's W getting his training and also perhaps hiding out, getting his training at a CIA-connected outfit.
Now, once again, business and intelligence matters fusing in vis-a-vis the Bush family. Another person you talk about, and this was an Air National Guard associate of Bush that we touched on in one of our last interviews, but this is a guy who also appears to have been recruited by the elder Bush and put to work for the intelligence community / CIA, and that is James R. Bath Skyway and some of the people he was networking with. Let's talk about that, because later on we're going to develop how that that once again helped to concretize the George W. Bush business fortunes.
Sure. Well, the background is that James Bath was grew up poor in Louisiana. He got into the Air Force. First, he was in the Civil Air Patrol in Louisiana, very interesting, right around the same period, more or less, as Lee Harvey Oswald got his initial sort of paramilitary training first as a pilot for the Civil Air Patrol. Civil Air Patrol was started by people in the Rockefeller family, other wealthy families, as a kind of a civilian way of being loyal to the country, and also that it could be activated in wartime. And so it was a kind of an intelligence outfit, you might say. And one of the founders of it was D. Harold Byrd, the owner of the building that housed the Texas School Book Depository at the time that Oswald was employed there and allegedly shot Kennedy. So anyway, there's James Bath out of the same Civil Air Patrol. He joins the Air Force. Jim didn't want to talk too much about what he had done over the years. I got the impression from people I had talked to that he'd served in Vietnam in some secret capacities in air bases out of Thailand. We're looking at the early 60s when the U.S. was not supposed to be in Vietnam, so they were operating out of these surrogate locations. And so Jim does that. He's in the Air Force, and then he moves to Houston, and he joins the Champagne Unit, as we talked about in the earlier show, the same Air National Guard unit that then George W. Bush would join a bit later. And they would immediately become pals, and people almost had a sense that Jim's job was to be some kind of a minder. And that's a term folks know from the intelligence world. A minder is somebody who tags around with you and basically keeps you out of trouble. And so Jim seemed to be some kind of a minder for W, spending a lot of time with him, both in the guard and outside of it. And he apparently did manage to keep the son out of trouble as much as he could. Very interestingly, when W left the guard abruptly, long before his flying assignments were up, they used the fact many years later, flash forward 30 years later, and this is all a big controversy. The White House has to call a press conference in the 2004 reelection campaign to try to explain what happened to him and where did he go when he disappeared from the guard. And so they released a document showing that all it had been was he hadn't taken his physical, and you have to take a physical each year, and he was suspended for flying because of that. The document also had another person on there, the name redacted, but you could see that another person also had not taken their physical, and they used that to say, well, look, here's two guys in the same unit. They both didn't take their physical, so obviously it's no big deal. Well, that was enough for the American media to pretty much say, okay, I guess it's no big deal. Of course, they didn't ask who the other person was, whether the circumstances were related or not. But fortunately, the holes in the system, somebody who did a Freedom of Information request had obtained the same document without the other name redacted, and we know the name to be James R. Bath. And so both of them were bumped at the same time for failing to take their flight physicals. Now, Jim would have always taken his flight physical because he was one of the best flyers in the unit. He was a real top dog. He could fly upside down on somebody's wing. I mean, he was fabulous. And so it was a mystery to everyone why he dropped out. But the net effect of it, of course, was that it gave cover to W. Now, we flash forward a few years, and Jim Bath suddenly, he goes into various kinds of aircraft businesses because the National Guard is a part-time thing. But then he suddenly gets a phone call. The story is he gets a phone call, and somebody says, I understand you have this plane for sale. And he goes, you want the plane? It's such a clunker. And they said, yeah, but you got to fly it to us. That's part of the deal. And he said, okay, where am I taking it? And they said, you're taking it to Riyadh, Saudi Arabia.
Well, isn't that where everybody goes with a little clunker aircraft?
Yeah.
The thing that's so interesting about this period in James R. Bath's career is that once again, he appears to have been working for the intelligence community and Poppy Bush, and working as one of the strands in Poppy's web. You speculate specifically about Skyway.
Right. Well, you see, all of these entities, and so what happened, just a shorthand, is that he gets together with these two Saudis. One is a member of the bin Laden family. The other is a member of the bin Mahfouz, the very powerful Saudi banking family, both tied in very much with the Saudi royal family. And so using the money coming from these Saudis, he starts all of these operations, which he could never have started himself. Skyways, along with several others, identified as appearing to be involved with the Iran-Contra operation. And so the clear sense is that, by the way, there are several chapters in Family of Secrets specifically on this Saudi relationship because there's a lot to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But the crux of it is this, is that George H.W. Bush was involved in an effort, which began in the early 70s, actually, to form a security alliance with the Saudis. This is beginning at the time of the great oil embargo and those very, very long lines some of us may remember in the United States, and this was a disaster for the White House, the Republican Party, and the country in general. And it was seen as a national security priority to basically neutralize the Saudis and those with the oil supply, so it never happened again. And of course, much of that is what's driving our policy today in Iraq and Afghanistan, the control of these resources. So anyway, Poppy was very involved with that. And one of the things that they were going to do was they appear to have created this back channel, this sort of almost kind of a voluntary shotgun marriage with the Saudis, involving as middlemen Jim Bath, bin Mahfouz, and bin Laden. And so what they were doing was these guys, either with their own money or money that probably was coming from the Saudi royal family, agreed, first of all, that they would supply oil at a reliable and steady price to the United States. They also agreed that they would repatriate some of the profits back to the United States. Those profits then ran through a lot of them through Houston, through banks, one main bank on which Jim Bath and John Connolly and some other interesting figures were on the board, tiny little bank with huge amounts of money running through it. So it appears that they were cycling their petrodollars through Houston with the people from the Bush circle getting their piece of the action. But also that a lot of these monies were going into things like Skyways, which you were mentioning. In other words, a way of funding unauthorized wars, unauthorized covert operations abroad that were, again, serving the interests of this self-same group.
By the way, you alluded to Skyway and the Iran-Contra affair. Neil Barrett of Alaska Airlines that we looked at earlier, Alaska International Airlines that we looked at earlier, also was quite explicit about having done some work for the Iran-Contra operation. In this time period, let's recall some of the information that we talked about in earlier interviews. There are investigations in the 1970s, we're talking about, of intelligence community misdeeds, CIA in particular, and perhaps the daddy of them all was the Senate, that was the House Select Committee on Assassinations, which along with several other committees was looking into the assassinations of President Kennedy and also Martin Luther King. And by way of sort of setting the cast of characters, the dramatis personae for the subsequent discussion, let's review briefly the Halloween massacre in which the elder George Bush is placed in charge of the CIA. This at a time when, as we've already discussed, the intelligence community, CIA in particular, is looking for ways to evade public scrutiny, going private, so to speak. The Halloween massacre, Poppy's ascension to CIA director, and also the political genesis of two other names who, along with Karl Rove, figure prominently in the W narrative, Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld.
Right. So basically, what I explore in earlier chapters of Family of Secrets is the decision that Richard Nixon was not cooperating anymore, that he was sort of off the reservation, that he needed to go, setting him up through a series of first unsuccessful and then finally successful through the break-in entanglements, orchestrating an effort, we've talked about that on a prior show, to have him removed, and then also to, before they do that, to make sure that somebody's in place who they can count on. So they push Spiro Agnew out first in another scandal. They bring Gerald Ford in, make him vice president, then they push Nixon out. And so Ford becomes president. Now, he himself is a fairly sort of moderate guy, and I think probably all things, if all things were equal, probably would have done the right thing. But he also was a fellow who knew where some of the bodies were buried and wasn't about to buck these powerful people. They knew that when they put him in. He'd already been on the Warren Commission, where he had done their bidding and influencing the report to suggest improperly that a single bullet could have done the damage that it allegedly did. And so then he becomes president, and he starts trying to exert to assert some of his own independence again, like all of these other people, and quickly somehow or other is told that he isn't going to do that. And not only that, but instead of him being more liberal than Nixon, which some people thought, there is a sudden lurch to the right. And basically what happens is these two young men, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld and his protege Dick Cheney, who are there in minor capacity, suddenly they're chief of staff and essentially deputy chief of staff to Ford, and then they cause a shakeup. The deputy chief of staff becomes chief of staff. The chief of staff becomes Secretary of Defense, and then boom, 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 and the next thing that happens is at CIA, where they've got a leaky ship. They've got people on Capitol Hill demanding to know what the heck is this agency all about, what is it doing, and to try to assert some control over it as they should in a democracy. And of all the people in the whole world that they could bring in, they bring in Poppy Bush, this neophyte who claims no background in intelligence, and they bring him back from China, where he's basically a kind of a powerless token figure as envoy there. That was supposed to be on his resume and make him look good, and I assume he was up to some things there, but he himself admits he did very little in the actual diplomacy with the Chinese. But anyway, they bring him back to the U.S., and suddenly here he is installed at the helm of the agency in this most critical of years.
Russ, we are almost out of time on this side, but tell us about Family of Secrets, where people can get the book, and your website.
Okay, Family of Secrets, subtitle The Bush Dynasty, America's Invisible Government and the Hidden History of the Last 50 Years. Your local bookstore should have it. If they don't, bug them a bit and they'll order it. You can get it online, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You can go to our website, familyofsecrets.com. You can click there and order it. We also have our nonprofit investigative reporting site, which is, we hope, the future of journalism, whowhatwhy.com, whowhatwhy.com.
And want to hear more? Good. Stay tuned for Side 2, because this concludes Side 1 of For the Record program number 715, interview with Russ Baker. This has been recorded on June 6th of the year 2010. For Russ Baker, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.